Raising Playful Tots, show number 123. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you could stop by today. My name is Melitza. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids so that we can introduce a new play idea. If you're new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room over here as we watch the children play with wooden nativity blocks. Last week's show, I talked about 11 ways to give back to our kids. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week, it's the best of 2012 shows. I'm highlighting shows that you've loved during the year. If you've been thinking about sharing Raising Playful Tots with a friend, try this show, as it's a good snapshot of what we've been hearing all year round. I'll be right back after this short break. You can listen to Raising Playful Tots while you're on the move by choosing Stitcher. Stitcher is a free app available for your smartphone. Downloading this app is really quick and easy. Enter TOTS, that's T-O-T-S, during registration to be entered to win in their monthly draw. Then you'll receive the latest episode right there waiting for you of Raising Playful Tots. Not just that, but you can discover hundreds of other popular new shows. You can find all of this by visiting stitcher.com/tots. That's stitcher.com/tots. Welcome back to the show. It's really exciting to know that you guys are listening to the show, and especially this show, the best of 2012. I've been recording these episodes since 2009, and it's wonderful to have the feedback that we've been getting this year in 2012, letting us know the things that you want to learn, sharing the ups and downs of raising a playful tot. Because behind the scenes here, it takes a lot to actually get from idea all the way to production that we have here. I think on average, it takes 3 to 6 hours per show to produce it. And that's editing, producing, emailing, writing up the show notes, everything that goes along with it that you get here. And it's all worth it when you get feedback like this.
Hi Melitza, my name is Audrey Simmons. I wanted to leave a voicemail to thank you for all the work you do on the podcast. I've been listening for a while now and have never really gotten around to commenting or leaving any feedback. And I really enjoyed the Christmas episode recently. It reminds me a lot of the things that my family has chosen to do to focus on in our home to keep Christmas simple and connected to Jesus. And so I really enjoyed that and just the chance to focus on that again. And also, I just wanted to thank you for the podcast in general. I often listen to it while I'm doing dishes after all my kids are in bed. I have 3 kids under 2 right now. It just really encourages and challenges me to think about how they're functioning as toddlers right now. I tend to often turn to, why are they doing this? Why are they acting like this? Whenever they get upset about anything. And this podcast has just made me focus on what they actually need from me and what they're actually going through and what I should expect from them. And encouraged and challenged me to just be more involved with them beyond just sitting on the couch and reading books. And so thank you for all the work you put into this. I've really enjoyed it. I keep recommending it to people, and I look forward to listening to more podcasts in the future. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for the feedback. Let's jump right in now with an interview that we had in February with Ashley Merriman. She's the co-author of the book Nurture Shock. If you aren't familiar with Nurture Shock, then go to raisingplayfultots.com/Amazon, where you will see a link to that book and you'll be able to read more about it there. It's an amazing book. The chapters that we talked about was praise, but there's so many amazing nuggets in that book, but we looked at one aspect, praise. Praise has a major impact on raising a playful tot. And we talked about that in this interview. So Ashley, how does excessive praise distort children's motivation?
It kills it. That's a tad bit of a hyperbole, but not really that much, because excessive praise, you know, the most famous researcher on this is Carol Dweck, and she's actually done experimental studies where she just gave kids one line of praise. That's it. She wouldn't do the constant thing. She would just tell one kid, "You're so smart," and the other kid, "You tried hard." That should have had no effect, right?
Yes.
But instead, it, for the next hour, changed the course of how children worked, how hard they were going, what their persistence was. Kids who had been told, "You are so smart," at the beginning of an experiment, told her at the end that they would be more likely to cheat. Why? Because "you're so clever," "you're so smart," "you're so special," those give kids this idea that, as I was mentioning earlier, any mistake becomes really an indictment on who they are. So they would rather not try the hard thing. They'd rather do the easy thing because they know they'll get more praise.
Right.
The kids I work with, you know, I had a second grader on Saturday, and she was reading one of the easiest pre-kinder books that we have. I don't even think it was to the level of a Dr. Seuss Cat in the Hat. And she's in second grade, and I said, "Honey, isn't that easy for you?" She said, "Uh-huh." I'm like, "Isn't that kind of boring?" But they like knowing that they're doing well.
Yes.
I tell my high school students, I can write you a math test that you're going to get 100% on. I'll just give you 25 questions, and every one of them is 2 plus 2.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, it really teaches children that they end up choosing something to do, choosing something to learn based on their belief that they're going to have praise and recognition for it, not because they want to challenge themselves, not because they want to learn or grow.
Okay.
That's really where the excessive praise is a problem.
Okay.
In fact, some researchers have found that children who grew up with excessive praise can't pick a major at university.
Oh.
Because they don't want to commit to something that 2 or 3 years down the road they realize they're not good at.
Oh, right. Yeah. Wow. It has such a long-term effect. You would have just never have thought that it could go reach that far.
Well, and the longer kids do succeed, there are kids who are naturally or even preternaturally smart. They just get it, right?
Yes.
But the longer those kids hear "You're so wonderful," the harder it is they fall when they inevitably do meet some difficulty.
Yes. Yes.
It doesn't matter how brilliant your kid is, at some time they're going to realize calculus is hard.
Yes.
Or, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter what level. There's an American psychologist who says, please don't let it be that the first time your child had a difficulty was when they were in college.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
You know, it's fine if they skinned their knee, because they've got to know that they'll live through it.
Yes, you're so right.
Yeah, 100% agree with her.
I was going to say that you were talking about mistakes. I think that's really nice to go on to the next question, where sometimes we can overlook mistakes because we don't want to be critical or nitpick at anything. So we concentrate on praising what they can do. And you mentioned a few examples in your book that children need to discuss mistakes. Can you explain that a little further?
Mm-hmm. Well, for one thing, if you never talk about the mistakes, if you only talk about the good things, you're giving a message that mistakes, failure is so terrible, we dare not speak of it. Remember, like in the 50s, when it was inappropriate to talk about the fact that someone had cancer? So you would just say.
That was part of show number 86, Praise and Its Impact on the Under 5 Child at Play. You can listen to the rest of the interview by going to raisingplayfultots.com/86 or look for Praise and Its Impact on the Under 5 Child at Play. I grew up watching a show called Blue Peter, where they would make a craft activity or a baking item or something, and it was meant to be something simple and easy that kids could make. They often had the presenter showing a little bit about how to make it in two or three stages, and there was always the finished final version that would appear from nowhere that looked absolutely great. The thing about that show was that the items that they made always looked amazing and were usually made out of things that we could find at home. As long as you had double-sided sticky tape, it seemed that everything was okay. Well, our house, like I'm sure many other houses, we just didn't have all of these things at home in the right places at the right time. And it kind of impacts the way I decided to do family this time round. What is it that we can use in our house that our children can play with that's good, that we don't have to go and buy all of these things? And so that was show number 112, the home supply list. Instead of having to go out and buy tons and tons of things, some special items, what can we use at home already, and how can we prepare our home to have things in it so that we can do simple play activities whenever we want to? Have a listen. Back to the show. Today I wanted to talk about a home supply list. And a home supply list is different from a school supply list or a craft supply list. It's kind of a mixture of all of those. When we're at home, there's lots of activities that we want to do, and sometimes it doesn't fall neatly into a craft supply list because we want to do some active play. And so sometimes it falls into the school supply list, but we're not really at school and maybe we're not homeschooling. So this is kind of a hybrid of all of those lists. So this is a list for people that are at home with their children and want to play with them. So that kind of covers everyone, really, whether you are at work and your children are at home playing, or whether you're at home full time or part time with your children. This is the type of list that you really want to be accumulating in your house. Now, when you look at traditional school supply lists, you know that you're going to have to go out to some of the big box stores to buy certain types of pens or pencils that have been asked for. You know, when you're looking at a craft or art supply list, that they're going to list certain art supplies that you're going to have to find in special places. Well, the difference with this home supply list that I wanted to talk about today is that most of these items you can commonly find in your local supermarket, in your local shops, and you probably actually have them already at home. You probably just don't think of them enough that you can use them for other types of activities. So this home supply list that we're going to talk about today are things that you can have at home that will encourage all sorts of active and fun play. You'll be able to craft with it, you'll be able to play with it, and you'll be able to use it along with your child to have some playful times. So let's start at the beginning. Before you want to be getting any of some of these items on your home supply list, you need to prepare your home for play. You have to think about what type of parent are you going to be for playing. Some of us really like the messy sensory play and are all for that, we don't mind. Some of us, we know ourselves, we really want everything to be nice, neat and tidy. You need to think about how you're going to set up your play for home. Where will you play? I think one of the most frustrating things about having young children is when you find a play activity and craft idea or something that you're going to do with your children that you know that they will absolutely love. Maybe you run into it on Pinterest, maybe a friend has mentioned it, maybe you've seen it in a shop, watched it on the television, seen a video. You're pumped and excited about this activity, you get it all ready, you buy all the things perhaps, you gather all the equipment together, you know when you're going to do it, you have all of this energy for it, and then something happens between you and your child that results in them screaming, throwing a tantrum, and getting really mad. And now you can see that doing this activity is probably not a good idea at the time. And you, the whole thing has been hijacked by this anger, frustration, and emotion. Tantrums are probably the number one thing that I've heard lots of you write in and said were causing the biggest disconnect between getting play activities done and craft activities and your child being able to do them, is the tantrums, the anger, the frustration. And so it was really exciting that we managed to speak to Amy Spidell of Conscious Discipline, and she gave us some approaches to use to move us through this season of early childhood learning. This was a fantastic interview. Took lots of notes myself, and it's 45 minutes or more of amazing activities. So I'm going to just highlight a small amount, but I would encourage you to go back and listen to that interview yourself. It's show number 93, and it's also called Positive Ways to Get to Play Activities by Bypassing the Grumps. That's Positive Ways to Get to Play Activities by Bypassing the Grumps. It's effective ways of dealing with tantrums, frustration, and anger with your child. And Amy Spidell is talking.
So if you're calm, they will learn to calm. If you get really agitated, there's no way for them to calm down. So a parent who's yelling calm down will never help their child calm down. It just never goes that way.
I think that's one of the ironies of parenting, when you overhear
it?
Other parents saying these really odd things, and then you think, actually, I say the same thing.
I know.
Down.
My favorite is, stop yelling!
Yes. Exactly. No, there were really good practical tips there of practicing and actually putting these things into action, because normally, like you said, we just, you know, don't do that. We don't do it enough. Mm-hmm. We don't teach them. We don't show them how we can do that. Would you expect then that as you're doing it, that the first couple of times, if you have, let's take the incident of the television being turned off, if you've always turned it off and you've had the eruption of no and all of
yeah,
that,
right.
Then the first couple of times when you try this newer method, that there'll be a little resistance and a little, it'll be a little difficult, but we should persevere.
Yes. And what we often say is that children learn 2,000 times in context. So it's a long road. This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. So we are teaching over time by believing that they're going to get it. You know, if we believed that children should stand up and walk across the room the very first time they ever try, then we will be very disappointed in their walking, right?
Yes.
So learning behaviors is the exact same thing. Learning how to manage your big giant feelings is just such a big deal, and it is hard, and we all want what we want when we want it. So it's hard to deal with disappointment, and that's every time the world doesn't go their way, they're having to face disappointment. And I would say that even as adults, we don't like disappointment. We just learn to manage it better, at least
right. Most
of us.
Yes. No, but that's good to know, because it can be frustrating when you think that you've been doing it for weeks and weeks and a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
and you just think, you know, are they really listening? Are they really getting somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
But they do. And it's just keeping
right. Going.
And even in the face, it seems, of in them not telling you that they understand. I think we'll be amazed when they're elsewhere and we're not there, the things that come out of their mouth.
Exactly. Yes. They often show total strangers their better self before they reveal that they've learned it to us.
yes. So how do we change behavior in our children?
Okay, so there's a couple of ways to begin that shift for children. And the first one is that we really want to pay attention to what we're focused on.
Next up is another show that I've listened to many times. Really enjoy what Dr. Laura Markham talked about. That was show number 105. And we were talking about teaching emotional intelligence and emotional literacy through play. Emotional literacy, emotional intelligence, they're often interchangeable. Different places say different things, but it's very similar enough that you could call them the same. It's not something I'd really knew much about, and so it was a really interesting conversation that we had as she talked us through the benefits of focusing on EQ for parents, what is emotional intelligence, and how do we show and teach that to our children? The exciting thing is that Dr. Markham now has a new book out called Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, How to Stop Yelling and Start Connecting. Now, you'll be able to find that over at raisingplayfultots.com/Amazon. That will be over there as well for you to be able to look at. It's a chance to be able to really tune into what our kids are doing. So I hope you enjoy this selection.
I think the best way to keep track of how to do this is to think of the word share. Kids learn to manage their emotions when we share their experience, their emotional experience, right? So what does that mean to share? Well, we know it means that you're part of it with the other person. You understand what they're going through. But we can also use that SHARE as an acronym. So we can say S stands for soothe, H stands for help them vent. I'm going to go back to each of these. So S stands for soothe, H stands for help them vent, A stands for allow feelings. So you limit actions, but you allow feelings. R stands for respond. Don't react. Don't be reactive. Respond. So that's about managing our own emotions. And E stands for empathize, which is almost magic. So we can talk about each of these five things that we do with children when we share their experience that teaches them emotional development. It helps them develop emotionally, but it teaches them emotional intelligence to be aware of their own emotions and to manage them, and also to be aware of other people's. So let's start with soothe, most important thing. And you may wonder how we learn. Well, first of all, you may wonder why it matters to be able to soothe themselves, these children. Well, if I have a daughter who has something disappointing happen and she can't soothe herself, she's going to be explosive. She's going to have, an outburst at me, at her siblings. She's not going to be able to manage herself through the anxiety of getting her homework done. She's not going to be able to handle it when I say goodbye and drop her off at school. She won't be able to manage the normal tasks that every child has to manage because she can't soothe her own anxiety and her own fear and her own anger. So soothing is really important, self-soothing. But there's a fallacy out there that kids learn to self-soothe by being put in a cot and left to cry.
Yes.
And that's just not true. We actually, it's an old idea. It's been around for generations, that idea. And there's new research. So I don't fault anybody in the last generation who thought mm-hmm. that was the case. But the truth is, in the last 15 years, 10 years, we have an ever-increasing number of studies that show the same thing, which is, neurologically speaking, the way we learn to soothe is by developing the neural pathways to release those soothing biochemicals. And you have to have the biochemicals get released, and then you have to have the neurotransmitters and the synapses set up to actually connect to have those neurotransmitters relay the information. So it's not just an automatic thing that people are born with those neural pathways. In fact, humans are born very adaptable. You could be born into a situation that is a terrible situation, like a war zone or a jungle where you're left by yourself with no parents and you have to survive. And, you know, your brain will adapt to that, and it won't be very emotionally intelligent. And you may not be able to save yourself, but you'll be reacting in a hair trigger, right? Because you'll need to stay to survive.
Yes.
So, but what about if you're born into my house or your house? What if a child is born into the house of anybody listening? So I'm talking to the person listening here and saying your child was born into your house and it's not a war zone, and your child needs to learn to soothe, self-soothe, so that he can manage his anxiety and his emotions. How is he going to learn to do that? He's going to, first of all, be born, and then he's going to cry, and you're going to pick him up. And you're going to soothe them and say, oh, sweetie, you're safe. Mommy's right here. Papa's right here. And you're going to hold your child, and your child is going to stop crying and say, oh, wow, I've got this adult here who seems to really be taking care of me, and I'm now warm. I've now been fed. Life is good. Hmm. And this will happen over and over again. And every time it happens, those soothing biochemicals will be released. and your child will be building the neural pathways for self-soothing. Now, if some of the time your child cries and cries and the cotton doesn't get picked up, and I'm talking infants, I'm talking about babies under the age of a year, because it's when this work is all done, neurologically speaking, most of the initial work is done in that first year. So if the baby's left to cry in the cot and is not soothed, it actually, those neurochemicals are not released, and the baby's in a state of alarm and worry, and it'll be harder to soothe the baby next time. Babies who are not soothed promptly actually cry more often, and they cry for longer periods. And the reason is that their self-soothing mechanism is a little delayed or a little compromised, in fact.
Oh, interesting.
And if they get older, it will stay compromised. Now, we can always, let's say you didn't know this. Let's say you did what you were supposed to do and you were told to do, and you put your baby on a schedule and you left him to cry in the cot. Understandable that you didn't know. Okay. And now your child is 3 or 4 and is having a very hard time calming down and soothing, and is difficult and explosive, even having outbursts. You can teach your child still to soothe by being extra soothing yourself, by being there and accepting your child's full range of emotion. So let's say your child is now 4 and is having a hard time calming down. He gets upset easily, he cries a lot, or he's explosive maybe. So you can help your child and help him to rewire his brain. The brain actually is much more plastic than we realize. However, it's a little harder than if you do it right from the beginning. It's like when you build a house from the ground up, you get it right.
Yes.
You have to go back and renovate. It's a lot more work to change things around. So you could think of this with your 4-year-old as a renovation. The brain rewires itself very dramatically at the age of 6. So your 4-year-old has not gotten to that point yet and is still very plastic. The brain is still very plastic, very malleable. So every experience your 4-year-old has really changes the brain. And if over and over you now offer soothing experiences, your child will become more able to soothe himself. But and now we're going to get into the second one, which is help them vent. But you still have built up some big feelings in your child from being left alone to cry that are going to keep your child from self-soothing until you help your child express those feelings and heal from them, because it's a mini trauma. It's a little bit of a trauma, a mild trauma, but it's definitely a trauma when they're little, when they've stored up those feelings. So
I think we all have some of those days when we think that our children should just understand what needs to be done. When we've got a friend around and it's a play date and we say, you need to share, you need to share. And it's really hard to actually teach children how to share because they have to actually do that process and we have to be there. So this was a question I put to Amanda Morgan of the popular blog Not Just Cute. She's written an amazing book called Parenting with Positive Guidance. And she also has an e-course that helps parents go through that. So I thought she would be the perfect person to have on the show to talk about how to teach children to share. And she gives some really brilliant advice on how to do it. And I've got an extract here from the interview that we did together. This was interview number 87. You can find that at raisingplayfultots.com/87, or you can search for it with how to teach children to share.
If you're having a play date and kids are coming over, that there are certain items we should maybe put away beforehand, things that are hard to share or things that are easily broken that maybe need to be put away. I guess I try to explain to my kids it's okay not to share everything, but if you have something you don't want to share, then it's more polite to put it away and not have it in front of your friends. Because just as it's natural for them not to want to share some things, it's also natural for other children seeing it to want to have a turn with it.
Yes.
So I think it's teaching some of that as well.
I think maybe if we are proactive and we see that our children really like something, and if they're not at that stage to be able to say it, I know my boys, when they were much younger, weren't very good at expressing what they felt other than tugging at it, pulling at it, and then wailing. So the language just wasn't developed well enough for them to be able to do that. But I knew that it might be a problem. So, you know, things would just kind of disappear if friends were going to come around.
Right.
So they would look for it and I'd be like, oh, I don't know, maybe it's got washed or something. Right. But it just kind of helped, I thought.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something to be proactive about. And that, like you said, depending on the child's age and language ability, to that kind of determines their role in that. But it's just, you can see it coming a mile away sometimes. And so you just remove that temptation in some situations and provide opportunities where it is easier. So they're, like I said, the neutral items, or making sure you have enough of everything to be able to share adequately. And it's, you know, you have enough supplies for everybody to have something to play with. Those kinds of proactive steps are big. And I think you hit on as well with the language skills. That's really a big part of social skills in general. And so we guide our children through the actions of sharing, but I think it's just important to guide them through the language of sharing. And so even with the very young children, with toddlers, to kind of parallel talk or sports cast as they're playing and talking about, you'd like a turn with that. How would, as you can see them playing, they're not saying anything, but you can see, oh, you know, John's playing with that ball. It looks like you would like a turn. We need to ask John for a turn. And if your child can't, you know, say what you're saying, you can talk for them and talk them through those social skills to give them a social script. And I've had a lot of success with preschoolers that can do their own talking, just teaching them, can I have a turn when you're done, please? It's one of those social scripts that's just been almost magical for me to watch children use, because, you know, in 1 minute they're pulling and tugging and fighting over it. And as soon as you introduce that script, I just think it includes all those components. So they're not just saying, can I have a turn, which can be threatening, saying, give it to me now.
Yes.
But saying, can I have a turn when you're done, is easier for both of them, because it communicates to the player that you can finish first, and it communicates to the one that's asking, you know, you don't get it immediately, but when she's done, she'll be giving it to you. And it's so funny to watch how quickly, you know, these children that are playing tug of war, suddenly the player is done in 30 seconds because it's their own choice. It goes back to that power thing. If you let them have a little power and control in when they get to give it up, then it goes so much more smoothly than when we try to intervene too much and interject ourselves too much into that social situation.
Other popular shows have included show number 83 that I did with Dan Miller about family mission statements, and Simple Steps to Family Rhythm and Ritual, which is show number 117, and that's with Kathy Stowell. Perhaps yet, or perhaps in a long time, what's been the benefit of you having a mission statement that you could share?
It gives a direction. I see so many people who are, in essence, just wandering around. And then at some point, they look at their lives in retrospect and looking back. But it allows you the freedom of really deciding in advance what kind of a life you want to live. A lot of people think that resolutions or mission statement or goals somehow remove the spontaneity from life. You know, they want to be free spirits. They want to get up and just kind of do whatever, you know, seems fun or important at the time. Well, that kind of sounds okay, but those kind of people really never accomplish much of significance, I've found. So again, without trying to create an artificial structure that we don't want, it just allows for a focus. So it's a release of our best skills and our best efforts if we have a resolution in advance.
So what are some of the rhythms and rituals in your family life? Things that you do regularly or specific times during the year?
Okay. Well, we've always been a very home-centered family, just because, you know, we're living in a homestead and we were homeschooling for a few years. So it's pretty easy to implement some of the basic rhythms, such as, you know, this is the time we wake up and I have to go milk the cow and then we're going to have breakfast and this and this and this. But the types, other rituals we have in terms of weekly, for instance, we've had forever is, you know, we would always go out for dinner at the local restaurant on Friday nights, and then Sunday mornings we would have pancakes without fail. It's funny, all the rituals revolve around food for me, but
that's good. Food's always good.
But another thing I've done is, and this was really inspired by the Waldorf curriculum I followed. We did kindergarten for a couple of years, and then grade one last year with my daughter is each day would be assigned a task, like a homemaking task. So
time seems to be a big pressure that we all have problems with from time to time, whether it's because we have work commitments or family commitments. There's just so much pressure to do the right things in the shortest amount of time without making any mistakes at all. Well, Raising a Playful Tot, is this show is not about getting everything done absolutely perfectly. We will be making mistakes. We make mistakes. We are learning together about ways that we can raise a playful tot together. And one of the biggest issues that people have been talking a lot about is that work-life balance. How can we do what we need to do and do, you know, insert whatever your activity is? And for us, that would be raising a playful tot. So it was really interesting to have a show on that this year. Show number 90, I was fortunate enough to have my friend on there, Ali McDonald from notimeforflashcards.com, and we both talked about work-life balance.
And I love it, and I love watching what my kids do. I get asked all the time by readers, what's your schedule? And I really try to schedule open playtime more than I try and schedule the crafts, because often when someone refuses a nap, when a certain little girl refuses a nap, in order to not be angry that I'm not getting the time, my downtime, I end up going to the playroom. We do crafts at that time. So when she didn't nap last week for 3 days straight, I think we got 8 crafts done, because it was like, let's try another thing, let's do another thing, let's just get this time so I'm not, you know, because during nap time is the time that I have, my son has some quiet time after we play, he has quiet time by himself, and I get work done. And so if that's not done, I feel like I have to be productive some other way. It works, she gets tired and goes to bed early after that.
Well, that's what you want. That's what you want. You want some sort of a system that works. I think the funniest thing about what you've said is that you want to plan for an unstructured time. It just seems like it's an oxymoron, doesn't it? Planning to be unstructured, but that's completely how you have to do it.
It does, doesn't it? Because, I don't know if it's, I've created my kids to need more structure, or if they're just like me genetically and they like having a plan, but I'm not, even just in general life, I'm not loosey-goosey like, oh, we'll just do whatever. I'm always like, no, what's the plan? I'm used to having a chalkboard with a little daily schedule, like free reading time, blah, blah, blah. But it's been great. I mean, with the weather getting better with springtime, I'm so excited to just go outside and explore and do simple things. I really think most parents are, when I look at what posts of mine are getting a lot of traffic, it's a lot of simple things that are. It's not the elaborate, you know, real product crafts. It's the open, free time. But those don't really take up much of your day either. Open, you're not going to find a toddler just playing in the grass for 2 hours. It's just not going to happen. And I think a lot of people think they're doing it wrong if their kid's done with a craft after 5 minutes. But, I mean, a 2-year-old, 5 minutes, that's great.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that you have to plan into your day, is that you will have times where they will be totally engrossed and spending much longer than you would have expected. I don't know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes doing an activity that you're like, oh my goodness, there's no way I would have thought it would have lasted that long. And there's other things that they're like, okay, I'm done.
Literally, like one mark on the paper. Do you like my picture?
You're just thinking,
it's a lone
really?
Stick. Yeah.
Exactly, that you have to kind of give over to the fact that sometimes this is just how it's going to be. You kind of have to, I call them like back pocket ideas. You have to have these ideas to kind of chivvy them along and encourage them. And
When I was teaching 2 and 3 year olds, we had specific amount of art time, and we'd split the class. Half a class would do art and half would do French. It was at a pretty pretty posh school, my assistant teacher would be doing the art that I planned, and she'd be like, we're done. And one of the tricks we used to do, I mean, we'd be done. They'd be done after a minute. One of the tricks we used to do, and this is a school, so it's, you know, it needs to be a little bit more structured than a home would be to have the colors on different plates and say, here's the yellow. Now who wants orange? And slowly introduce them. I mean, they'd have access to all the colors, but it would be introduced one at a time to slowly let them explore with each. Because with each new plate of paint, ooh, it's new, and it would last. You know, we needed to stretch it out for the structure of the school. So yeah. I remember telling that to a reader, and she's like, that is brilliant. If you need it to be stretched out, here's a trick to do it.
If you want to listen to the rest of that show and find out more tips and tricks for being able to get more work done and more playing, then go to show number 90. And the title of that show is How Do You Divide Your Time Between Work That Has to Get Done and Playing with Your Child? Another interview I would love to share with you is by Anne Bogle, and that was on another show that I absolutely love on productivity called Beyond the To-Do List. If you go to that right now, beyondthetodolist.com, and you look for show number 17, they have an interview there with Anne Bogle, and she talks about work-life blending. And, oh, I love that word, blend, because we talk a lot about balance, and it seems to make you think that it has to be equal, because, of course, the balance has to be equal. But what, in fact, we're doing is blending. And so that is a fantastic interview. So if you are into work-life and wanting to do some change, then I would really recommend listening to that show. In fact, subscribing to all of them, because the productivity tips that are there are just absolutely amazing. Well, thanks so much for sticking around and listening to Raising Playful Tots this week. It's been the best of 2012 edition. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening during the year. It's been fabulous having you, listening to your feedback and learning all the different things that we can do to help raise a playful tot from your perspective and from the great guests that we've had. If you have an idea of a show, if you've got something that you've been struggling with, that you've been finding really tricky, that you would like some advice on from experts, people that have been there before you, you want to know a little bit more about how to do it, then get in touch. There's many ways that you can do that. We have a survey, raisingplayfultots.com/survey, where you can write your thoughts down and answer a few questions and let us know what you would like to see on the show. You can also go to any of the show notes for any of the episodes or email me through the contact form to be able to share what it is there as well. I've got lots of show ideas and future guests that are coming up in the new year. This is the last show for 2012. I won't be releasing a show next week or for the rest of this year. I'm going to be spending some time with the family, but there are plenty of archives for you to go back and listen to. I'm sure you'll want to go back and listen to some of the shows that we've been listening to today and hear more about what's going on. There's also lots of shows about so many different things, about sensory play, about mark making, about preschool, about Montessori. So many different things that you can go back and look at through the archives to listen to. Especially if you've a new listener, there are many ways that you can listen to previous episodes. If you love the show and you found value in it, would you do me a favor and go over to iTunes? That will be raisingplayfultots.com/iTunes page and give us a review. If you're a fan of Raising Playful Tots and you like what you've heard, we'd love if you could share some of that love by visiting raisingplayfultots.com/love, L-O-V-E. What this will do is it will make a tweet for you in your Twitter feed that will say something like, you're listening to the Raising Playful Tots show and that you love listening to it with me, which is at Play Activities. And it invites your friends to come and have a look and come and have a listen. So you can do that, and that would be great. If you'd like to comment on this show or any of the show notes that we have, then come on over to raisingplayfultots.com. It's always the number of the show. So this is show 123, so come to the show notes there. Scroll down to the comment section. Feel free to leave a comment there or a question. If you would like to leave voicemail, like Audrey did at the beginning of the show, then you can choose to go to raisingplayfultots.com/feedback. And you can record your voicemail right there. Love to hear from you. Well, have a safe and enjoyable Christmas, spending lots of time with the kids, and can't wait to hear all about it in the new year as we continue to raise Playful Tots. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 123. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!